I'm going to be speaking about some work we've been doing in Pennsylvania looking at biochar impacts on nitrous oxide emissions from switchgrass production. My co-authors are Roger Coida, Howard Skinner, Ben Nguyen, Paul Adler, and Patrick Drohan. Now, we've heard quite a bit about switchgrass at this meeting and others because of its potential, or not potential, but use as a bioenergy feedstock. And it can potentially be a cash crop on marginally productive lands where row crops or maybe some other forages may not be suitable. It's, you know, it's very long-lived perennial. It's very prolific, as you can see in that picture on the right. And it requires fairly low inputs as far as nutrients, fertilizer, pesticides, and other agronomic inputs. Biochar is something we've all been hearing quite a bit about too. One, it can add a soil carbon sink, but what we were more interested in our project was the potential of the biochar as a soil amendment, because there's been quite a few research publications, as well as talks at these and recent meetings, that show a wide range of impacts, such as improving water retention or improving drainage and soil structure, and one that's also been shown in some cases is the ability to reduce nitrous oxide emissions, and that's where we're going to focus on the presentation today. So we set up a field study at four locations in central Pennsylvania, not just to look at greenhouse gas emissions, but to look at switchgrass production with biochar amendments in general, as far as the agronomics and several other aspects. So we had a replicated block experiment with four replicates, a randomized block, and there were two different biochar application treatments that we tested. We either put everything on at once, 10 tons per hectare, as the picture in the left shows, or we did a treatment where we used the chisel, cut a slot, and added it into the slot, and that was divided over four annual applications. The picture on the right shows the first application before the switchgrass was established. Then in subsequent years, we side-dressed that into the growing switchgrass. Then we also repeated both of those tillage treatments without biochar. All of our switchgrass treatments got 60 kilograms of nitrogen in June, and it was applied as ammonium sulfate. And in addition to our switchgrass treatments, we kept a plot in each rep that was the pre-existing vegetation, and that varied at our different sites. So our first site, and I should say these were all marginally productive sites, either because they were excessively wet or excessively dry. And the first site was an excessively well-drained soil with about 30% gravel content up on the top of a hill that had been in a grass forage. Our next site was also well-drained, and it was a sandy soil that had been in row crops for several years. Our third site was a poorly drained silty clay loam soil, and here we're planting the switchgrass. All of our switchgrass was transplanted rather than drilled in to get quicker establishment. And our last site was a very poorly drained silty clay loam soil with the frangipane. So the site would quite often get flooded, and at least in spots, and soil moisture was quite high after any rainfall event. For our gas sampling, we restricted our measurement period to just once before fertilizer application and then a 2 to 4 week period afterwards. Since we were only concerned with comparing biochar and no biochar treatments to see if it had an impact on nitrous oxide, we weren't trying to look at a year-round emission. We used vented flux chambers that we deployed for about 24 minutes and took a series of samples throughout that 24 minutes and then analyzed our samples by gas chromatograph. So looking at results, well, our first site that was excessively well drained basically had almost no nitrous oxide emissions regardless of fertilizer application. The dotted line there is our minimum detectable flux, which I estimated to be about 5 grams of N2O per hectare per day. So we can see that at that site, you know, very low emissions, not surprising because it was so well drained, but it did show we weren't getting any nitrous oxide production from the nitrification of our ammonium sulfate fertilizer. Our second site, also well-drained, but sandy, again, had fairly low emissions in 2013, higher emissions in 2014. I don't have a graphic on the rainfall and soil moisture, but I will say that 2013 was slightly above average with rainfall, and we did have rain during our measurement period. In 2014 was a well above average rainfall month, and there were several rainfall events during that time. So when we get over to 2014, we see we did get some nitrous oxide emissions, but they were very spotty across the field. As you can see, our error bars are quite large. Those are the standard deviation. And so it was a highly variable emissions. And only in that one date did we get anything that was significantly different among treatments, but those treatments aren't consistent as far as the presence or absence of biochar. Now if we move on to our first poorly drained site, again, pretty low emissions in 2013, somewhat higher emissions in 2014, but again, the variability was quite high when there were emissions, so no significant differences among treatments. Now, moving on to our fourth site, which was that frangipane soil. We saw in both years there were some pretty large emissions, because this time greatly expanded y-axis. But again, very, very high spatial variation, you know, within treatments, and only on one occasion was there any significant differences among the treatments. So I think what this is showing us is that water content and its effect on aeration are probably overwhelming any impact of that the biochar might have been having on the nitrous oxide emissions. Now, besides the biochar, though, I think the take-home message from our work, though, is that switchgrass itself has a pretty low nitrous oxide emission potential. Here is our farm 2 that was in row crops, so we had our control that was corn, and so this time I've added in those corn plots, and they had a much greater response to fertilization. Now, for one thing, they required about 3 times as much nitrogen, but we were using the book rates on nitrogen application. So for our yield goal, you know, corn was getting a lot more nitrogen. And the switchgrass seems to be very efficient at using the nitrogen that's there, and it's actively growing and taking it up, where the corn, this wasn't a split application. It was all about 3 weeks after the corn was planted. So we're applying to, you know, smaller plants that didn't have a lot of demand. But it just shows that switchgrass is good from the aspect of reducing our nitrous oxide emission potential. And we also have done some lab assays to look at this. We did a denitrification enzyme assay. You know, so in that case, we looked at the total denitrification from adding acetylene to block conversion of N2O to N2. We add nitrate, we add carbon, make it anaerobic. So this is a potential measurement. And it was kind of interesting, for our two well-drained sites, there was no difference in DEA for a treatment, the soil with and without biochar. But when we got over here to our poorly drained soils, there wasn't a big difference, but there was a significant increase in DEA where biochar was applied. So that was the opposite of what we were expecting from past literature. So I don't know what to say about this result and why we would have somewhat higher denitrification enzyme assay in the biochar samples. So, conclusions, we found no consistent evidence that the biochar was impacting the nitrous oxide emissions in our soils. This may be because the influence of soil moisture on aeration appears to overshadow any effect of biochar. And since these are marginal soils, they are pretty highly variable, so that, you know, would lend to differentials in denitrification activity. Again, you know, assessing those differences was complicated because of the high spatial variability and just the fact that we have the hotspot nature of N2O production. But I think our biggest take-home message was just that we have an overall low potential for nitrous oxide emissions with switchgrass production, with the exception of our very wet Frangipan site. And that's a site where maybe we should be applying no nitrogen at all. And I would like to acknowledge our funding from the USDA NIFA, as well as additional support from ARS, Penn State, and Brigham Young University. And then thanks to Steve Lamar, Bart Moyer, Megan Carter, and Angela Teachout, who are folks that actually went out in the field and did the work. And I think I left myself a couple of minutes for questions. Rod?
Do you have a sense of the nitrogen use efficiency of the fertilizer recovery efficiency in switchgrass?
That's a good point, and I haven't calculated it yet, but I should. And we have some other switchgrass sites that are low, and I'm thinking that just the general paper on nitrogen use efficiency in switchgrass would be a good thing. Oh, I think most of the folks in this room that do nitrous oxide emissions know that it's so highly variable because the conditions that, especially for denitrification, that need to come together to have it happen, you know, I think it happens in very small niches and pockets and not evenly over the soil. So, yes.
So did you see any difference in the biomass here? The switchgrass?
And my co-author Howard Skinner is back there, and he might remember better than I do. We've had some small differences in biomass in some years.
Well, yeah, actually, so in the 2 years we've been in life so far, the biochar did promote switchgrass yield. The first year was not quite significant. The second year, there was a significant increase in yield with
the biochar. Yeah, and so the N2O is just one of the aspects, so we're looking at the whole picture. Oh, in the back there?
Do you have land use history for each of these types? Are they essentially been used in the same way? Or is
no, they're actually all been used differently. A couple have been in forages. Our Frangipan site was just scrub ground at the edge of a field. And then we had one site that was in corn. Actually, we had one that was our stony site was in a hay. But it's had row crops in the past, which seems really sketchy on that piece of ground, but it happened.